Hello, and this is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM, the News Collective's weekly hour-long news report, bringing you alternative and undercovered current affairs from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Alex DeBoer.
And I'm Zoe Pala.
And I'm Olamide Olanion.
Sorry, Zoe, that's your part.
Today it is Thursday, July. That's not the date. Today it is August, probably around the 8th or so. The 9th, you
Why
heard
do we even
it here
have
first.
A script?
And it is 5:03 p.m. We are broadcasting to you from UBC's beautiful Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Today on Democracy Watch, we have a live interview with pro-Vancouver mayoral candidate David Chen. Pro-Vancouver is a new political or apolitical party which aims to run City Hall with an evidence-based approach and is at the same time nonpartisan. We'll be chatting with David at 15:15, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, since we've been doing so much civic reporting for our new podcast, Seeking Office, we'll begin the show with 10 minutes of roundtable gossip on Vancouver municipal politics. That was our segue into municipal politics gossip. Where to begin? None of us are experts, but all of us...
I am like, what's like the opposite of an expert? Like, what's like the negative version of an expert here?
Like a civilian?
Ordinary citizen of Vancouver.
Okay. Yeah, like the average...
I was going for foolish, but like, yeah, definitely. Okay, I am hapless... But I'm a municipal junkie, but I'm also just like a hapless person who has no idea what's going on. So I need
Well, that's because you were just in Toronto, right?
Fair enough. But so like, I need help
need
of Zoe Power and Alex DeBoer.
Before you're going to understand who David Chen is and he's doing with Pro Vancouver in this election.
All right, let's do a hot takes rundown. It's not really hot takes at all, but that's a phrase that's
lukewarm,
popular right now.
Lukewarm takes. Very, very cold.
It's just facts. Regular words.
Cold facts. Cold hard facts.
Okay, what's happening right now? Vancouver's municipal election and the other municipalities as well are all voting on October 20th. That's coming up soon, a bit over 2 months. People running for mayor, we have Kennedy Stewart of Independent, former MP, Burnaby MP.
Famous for being arrested at the gates of the Trans Mountain Pipeline protesting earlier this year.
Along with hundreds of other people. Yeah, you know, he's from Burnaby. You kind of have to do that. And then... challenging him for first place, or I think he may have been first place in the most recent polls done, is Ken Sim of the NPA, the Nonpartisan Association, Vancouver's rightmost party. Then we also have Shauna Sylvester. She's an independent and a former NDP member. I can't remember if she was an MP or an MPP. And in addition to that, we have, of course, Ian Campbell of Vision Vancouver, the party that's been in power for the last 10 years. They've held a majority on council and held the mayor seat.
We have an episode about that on Seeking Office, actually.
Oh, what?
Yeah,
do we?
Like, yeah, we do.
Well, I mean, now that you mention it, yeah.
I think we want to like definitely plug that. Like, we want to know more about the history of Vision Vancouver, you know, how they split from, you know, the party. What was that before?
Do you want to cook?
Yeah, I know. But I need to just keep going. Yeah.
No, you didn't know. So that's available on Seeking Office. You can check that out. It's part one of How We Got Here series. We have the second part coming out soon. So I've just listed four candidates. We also have David Chen of Pro Vancouver, who we're talking to today, which is a new civic party. Who else do we have in addition
to that?
Are they
a party, though? We're going to find out,
right? We are going to find... Yeah. Good point, Ola. We're going to find out if they are actually a party.
We also have a Y Young's party,
thank
which
you.
Has received a bunch of NPA dropouts as mm. well. Right?
Yes, Way Young.
What's the word you use? NPA
Light? Defectors.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. No. Yeah. I'm thinking NPA Light is our other mayoral candidate, Hector Bremner.
Of course.
who we have an episode of Seeking Office on coming up as well.
Cool.
We have a lot of work on our plates and...
How many people
just
are
take a minute
for
everyone to empathize. So that was six. Yeah. And I believe there were seven when Patrick Condon was running, who was thought to be, he wasn't officially the mayoral candidate for COPE, but he was probably going to be. And he had some health issues and had to drop out, unfortunately. Wishing him the best. So other than that, a question that we also hope to investigate as the News Collective to, you know, just really put all of our intellectual force into is where are the Chernin brothers? And you know, this is something that's been on Twitter, and you know, I think Francis Beulah sort of put this question forward.
See, as a hapless, foolish non-knower of politics,
non-knower.
I think I need you to drop down. Who are they?
All right, how many Chernin brothers?
There's two, man.
All right,
there's two.
So you should call them the partners. I don't know. Brothers makes it sound like there's like more than two.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, they are definitely brothers.
I think they're related.
No, I know. But
it's
like
a pretty straightforward kind of sibling relationship. That's the least contentious thing about the Chernin brothers.
Cool. Awesome.
Indeed. Right. So there was Glenn Chernin, who hoped to run as the NPA mayoral candidate. He put his name forward. He came third in the nomination process.
Nice.
There were three people running.
He was the incumbent sitting councillor. He ran for the NPA last year in the by-election and was on council when he wanted to put his name in for mayor.
No, you're talking about Hector Bremner.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. Okay, so ignore the last 30 seconds. No, that was Hector Bremner. No, I don't think he's been on council. I could be wrong. I don't think he's been on council. But so he was with the NPA, tried to run for mayor, didn't get the nomination, and now he's sort of faded away. And people are wondering where he is. Why didn't he run for city council with the NPA? What's he up to? And then his brother Nicholas Chernin ran with the Green Party, seemingly a very different party. And of course, they're different people, but they've in the past had what appears to be aligned political views. There's the infamous story of them driving their muscle cars up and down bike lanes in a protest against bike lanes. So I guess Chernin did like a 180 or something and joined the Green Party. I don't know. Anyway, so he was nominated, I believe, to run for not council, but I think it was park board or school board. He had to drop out because he's involved in a lawsuit that he forgot about, or the Greens forgot about. The Greens, I guess, overlooked it. And so, yeah, he...
Spicy.
Oh, it's Zubin. We're talking about the Chernin brothers. Another News Collective member just walked in, also kind of an expert on the Chernin brothers. Not really an expert, but anyway, so he had to drop out because of a lawsuit, which is a whole other story, but we probably shouldn't get into it.
Yeah.
But it involves Vancouver is awesome.
Like, we're getting to that point where have you ever seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I've never actually seen it, but there's that meme that it's like string on like a board and like a couple of like chalk, and then there's like the pentagram, and then he has like glazed over eyes and he's like crazed a little bit. Yeah, that's where we're getting, that's the territory we're getting into right now.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool. Awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Someone needs to go there.
That's
Okay, fair enough.
We'll continue this.
True.
We'll continue this gossip next time. But now we'll go to some like actual content that is better than our ramblings. So please hold on for a break. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. When we return, we will have an interview with Pro Vancouver's mayoral candidate, David Chen, and you'll find out all about that party and their political alignment and much more. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you like the sound of your own voice? Are you a student that has a lot to say about the University of British Columbia?
If so, there is a place for you.
The UBC Affairs Collective is a brand new collective at CITR 101.9 FM that brings students together to cover campus news, including research developments, arts and culture, live discussions, and lots more.
The collective produces a weekly radio show, the UBC Happy Hour, that airs every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. You can find all the episodes podcasted online at citr.ca.
Send an email to ubcaffairs@citr.ca if you'd like to get involved. No prior radio experience is necessary.
People are really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
The perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
City Council? School Board? Parks Board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office, the newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar, the human serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
Member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts in Hastings Sunrise at
Beat Street Records, Bomber Brewing, Community Vintage and Thrift, Community Thrift and Vintage, Pandora's Box Rehearsal Studios, Red Cat Records, and Selectors Records.
Thank you.
could you say your name on tape and then also just say where we are and why we're here, please? Okay.
So my name is Rohan Rezal. I'm at the candidates 101 session at the town, the city hall, where they talked about what's involved in running for office at the upcoming election.
How would you situate yourself on like a political spectrum? Would you say you're closely aligned with any one party?
I wouldn't say that I'm closely aligned with any one party. I'd definitely say that I'm not aligned with NPA or Vision Vancouver. They're tainted. They have taken too much money from the real estate industry to be a credible party. I've had conversations with the remaining parties, and I really like of the parties that are running mayoral candidates, because COPE is not running a mayoral candidate, as you are aware. Professor Condon had to drop out for health reasons, and I wish him a speedy recovery. Great guy, I know him. And so of the parties that are running mayoral candidates, the only party that I can really feel any affinity towards is Pro Vancouver. That's David Chen's party. Because COPE is not running a mayoral candidate, Green Party is not running a mayoral candidate, One City is not running a mayoral candidate. So that really leaves you with just David Chen as the, you know, the untainted candidate at this election.
Hello, and you're back. We're back. This is Democracy Watch on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alex DeBoer. I'm here with Zoe Power and Olamide Olanian, and also Zubin Shroff-Marabadi. And we just heard a clip. That was Pro Vancouver City Council candidate Rohana Rezal. He was talking with myself, Alex DeBoer, outside of City Hall about 3 weeks to a month ago. And Rohana is now joining mayoral candidate David Chen and city council candidates Breton Krellen and Raza Mirza, as well as school board candidate Tiffany Kindred on the Pro Vancouver slate. So in April, Pro Vancouver joined a somewhat crowded race for office in Vancouver's 2018 civic election. And Pro Vancouver, led by mayoral candidate David Chen, has said they aspire to build strong communities and maintain transparency in City Hall. Four pillars of their platform include housing affordability, making the city livable, building a responsive City Hall, and enhancing business development. So in addition to this platform, Pro Vancouver has stood out by asserting that they are neither a left-wing nor a right-wing political party. So we have David Chen on the line with us to talk about all this and more. Hello, David Chen. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, did our call drop?
He's still there.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay,
hear
awesome.
You.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you for a sec. Thank you for your patience in setting this call up and for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Awesome. So first of all, I just wanted to ask to clarify, is Pro Vancouver an actual political party or is it just a group?
So we're an umbrella organization that links independents together. And because of that, we came up with the concept that in real life, nobody really uses a political spectrum to decide how they deal with things. I mean, if you ask yourself that when you decide what you want to do that day, go out, whatever, we don't look at are we left, are we right? So what we do is we're going through a process of saying, what is the problem, what is the need, and how do we solve this? And being able to pick from anywhere within a political spectrum actually makes us much stronger in developing the right solution to meet the needs of the time.
Okay, yeah. When I hear you saying that, what it kind of reminds me of is Hector Bremner and Yes Vancouver, because I think they would say a very similar thing, as their party is the other political party that has also said they're neither left nor right wing. Would you say that you're essentially positioned the same as Yes Vancouver, or how are you different?
Well, I think there's a few things that we have to acknowledge. We actually came out first. Pro Vancouver, if you look at the structure of the name of the organization, Yes Vancouver copied that. So it's hard to say that we're the same in the sense that if they copied us, we can't prevent that. But, you know, when we look at everything, we came up with a concept that we don't want to be blindsided. Everything in nature goes through cycles. There's always an equilibrium, and we want to make sure that we're not extreme in any way, but we are able to actually meet the needs of the time as it pops up. So that means that as things cycle, we're not going to be 180 degrees outside of the need with regards to solutions to, for the people.
Right. Okay. So you have a similar name. It's a, you know, positive Vancouver, pro Vancouver, yes Vancouver. And you both are neither left nor right wing. But what, like, have you been paying attention to Yes Vancouver? Do you find that a lot of their platforms, which include sort of deregulating development in the city and having less single family zoning and having more like economic stimulus, is that similar to what Pro Vancouver wants to do, or are there? Go ahead.
They're very different. I mean, everybody is dealing with key topics within the city, and those topics are not going to change. The actual solution that's being delivered is very different from party to party. You look at Yes Vancouver and Hector Bremner, even when he was still affiliated with the NPA and trying to get the mayoral nomination, it was always about supply. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that the equation isn't really an equation of supply. It's more about demand and also money supply. So you need to ask yourself a very basic question, which is, who do you actually know that can afford to pay cash for a property and leave it empty? Mm-hmm. I certainly don't know anybody like that. So this is that unknown thing that nobody wants to fess up to, which is, we have a problem with unregulated global capital. And if what you're trying to do is to meet a supply to an insatiable demand from the globe, and that also includes interprovincial, that becomes a very difficult equation to satisfy. So what actually needs to happen is, we need to intervene with a certain type of supply, not just supply in general, but a certain type of supply that will tend to put a pressure on the pricing in Vancouver for housing to actually bring that down.
Right. And how will that happen? Like, what is this particular type of supply?
So first of all, we've gone on record by saying that Metro Vancouver did a study, which was quite interesting, that said that around transit hubs, they find that there's a lot of market speculation. But the problem is that the housing that's built around those hubs, typically they're at market rates, which means that the people in them actually aren't real transit users. And so even if you vary the income up or down, they found that transit use did not change. Whereas if we actually do what we said on record, is that we're going to use the new powers that the province has given the city to actually purposely zone those areas to be rental only, then what happens is it changes the equation. We found that renters will typically use transit more, and that's exactly what we want to have happen, so that transit can actually support itself, so that it is being used, and so that traffic ends up decreasing within the city. Mm. And that's not something that Hector Bremner and Yes Vancouver are talking about.
Right. And I know that you've also said that you would like future development, housing development in the city, to be mandated to have 50% rental. So how would you do that? Is that, like, would that be hard to work out with developers? How would you make that happen?
Well, there's a lot of things that we have to first look at. So when we're talking about social housing and those that work within a development process, they know that there are a lot of concessions that the city can give to make projects affordable in terms of the calculations actually working out. But there's also another thing, and I went to public meetings or public hearings with regards to this, and I said that, you know, when you're talking about social housing, nowhere in that term does it say profitability. And especially with developers, when they have multiple developments and we're looking at specific ones that are earmarked for social housing and for affordability, nowhere in that equation does it say that they need to have a high profitability, nor that they can't write off even losses within those projects with other projects that they hold. That's a very normal business concept. So really what we're looking at is, we're saying, okay, we want a more level playing field. We don't want key developers that are having carte blanche to do whatever the heck they want to have that any longer. But we want to have a transparency. We want a fair competition process We want something that says, okay, we're in this together for everybody, not just for profitability. Other things that we're looking at are things like involving market investment. So typically we get municipalities that deal with bonds. They borrow money, and at maturity they have to pay it back, and they pay simple interest or compound interest, depends on whatever they create. But at the end of the day, it's a debt that has to be paid back. And we've already seen on a smaller scale that there are companies that are involved in buying projects to actually provide housing and to provide some level of security collateralized against the property and an income stream from the rents. And the idea is good, but it's too small a scale. And so what I would like to do is investigate actually bringing much larger investment companies. You know, when we look at mutual fund companies, they're constantly looking for new instruments that they can purchase that offer security for their clients, but an income stream. And getting something like that, where we have that participation with the other assets that the city has available, including some funding from the province, we can theoretically, and again, this is one of those that we actually have to crunch all the numbers, but this is a beginning kind of a concept. We can get to the point where we can connect all the dots and actually provide that type of housing.
Okay. I'm going to just go back a sec for when you were saying that when we were talking about building housing that is 50% rental. So you were saying how housing doesn't always need to be, like, building housing doesn't always have to be profitable or have that as its main priority. So that's fine. But would it still be profitable if we were doing that with all new development to mandate that it's 50% rental? Or would you still allow some sections of the city to be built as purchase only, like condos? Or do you really think the entire city you would mandate that, or would there be like a zone, like would you zone the city differently, or would that be the entire city?
Well, remember the term 50% rentals doesn't mean that a building has to be split in half. It's 50% rental and 50% market.
Okay.
You can still have in a numbers game a building that is completely rental and other buildings that are completely market.
Right. Okay.
But again, the point is to balance this all off. We have to look at what is the profitability and what is the impact costing. And also, we have to open up this competition. There are actually a lot of mid-tier developers that are trying to do the right thing, and they're struggling because there are actually top-tier developers that get carte blanche.
Right.
And so when you look at that, I mean, that's sort of an anti-competitive process to have that. And when you open up a competitive process, what typically happens is prices come down, and a lot of times qualities go up because competition exists.
Right.
And that's really what we're looking for, is to make sure that we have that balance. So the reason why we need the 50% rentals is we know that statistically in Vancouver, 53% of the residents are renters, and the rental stock is way below that number. So we need to up that number in order to meet that demand.
Right. So does that include rezoning, single family housing, which makes up 75% of the city?
Yeah. So rezoning will still have to be looked at in terms of the community plan. We're not going to go into this shotgun blanket rezoning that's occurring right now in City Hall, which can have a lot of negative effects, including the communities are not being consulted. But worse, that in that process, a lot of times there is a massive discount or a complete loss to levies that go to the developer that are actually required to build the community amenities like community centers and daycares and whatnot. So we can't go through a process of just saying we're going to shotgun do all this, but we want to have a community action plan that has taken into account the zones, the people there, and what direction the city is going at, and use that as a basis to plan out how we're going to deal with the zoning.
Right. Okay. So we're going to move on to a different topic. Does anyone else want to ask anything? I'll just keep going.
One question to follow up on what you were saying about bringing in new types of developers to build in Vancouver and bringing in new types of investment firms. In the past, we've seen, I mean, regardless of who's actually behind projects that undertake to maintain a certain ratio of social housing in the city, whatever commitments have been undertaken, and we've seen this, for example, at the Olympic Village site, probably in the most high-profile way, these commitments and targets of social and non-market housing have ended up being eroded over the course of the project. And more often than not, the entire project has ended up going for market rate housing and for the most part for sale rather than for rental. So what would you and what would Pro Vancouver do to sort of buck this trend and make sure that these new targets you're setting are actually enforced and mandated?
So one of the things that is attached to sort of this responsive administration within City Hall is we are looking at a concept of fast-tracking developers that are actually playing according to the rules. And in business, time is money. So anytime anybody gets slowed down, it will cost them. So when we look at this concept in terms of your question of enforcement, well, guess what? If the social housing component of a mixed development is not respected and it doesn't come out that way, we can very easily not fast track that developer in the future and give an advantage to one that has played by those rules. I mean, at the end of the day, Vancouver City Council actually has to be the boss that is responding to the ultimate boss, which is the voter, the people that reside within Vancouver. It shouldn't be the other way around where council is responding to developers.
In the recent past, in the Vancouver housing market in particular, time equals money, the normal kind of equation that we go by, has been somewhat distorted by the fact that the appreciation in housing values has almost so much as doubled over the course of a year, which would, I guess, kind of reduce the power of fast-tracking as a disciplinary measure. So what other kinds of policies would Pro Vancouver be bringing in to end that sort of speculation and the constant blooming of the housing bubble here in Vancouver?
Well, don't forget that the city still has the power of rezoning. They don't have to grant future zoning for developer projects. They don't have to grant development permits. They don't have to do a lot of things. And so I hear what you're saying that, you know, within a market that is appreciating that fast, is there still an enforcement threat from the city or the ability to put some pressure on the system? And I would wager that there is, because for one project, maybe not if it's in process, but for other projects that are coming online, I think that there's a lot of bargaining power that the city actually has if it has a willpower to keep control.
Something that I'm interested in that I talked with Rohanna a bit about outside City Hall is the idea that, or the reality that Pro Vancouver doesn't really have a sort of catchy slogan or some sort of flashy kind of go-to phrase. And one thing he was telling myself and Andy, the other News Collective member, about is that Pro Vancouver is in a way nonpartisan, and so people within the party wouldn't necessarily have to vote together. Is that true? And if so, can you tell me a bit more about that?
Absolutely. So within our constitution, when we built the organization, one of the things that we were responding to, and this just gives you a bit of the history, we knew that there were other influential people within the community that got reprimanded for joining other parties just because they supported certain individuals that were running them by elections. And we looked at that saying, well, you know, if someone doesn't fully resonate with a group, they should be allowed to participate with other groups, and they should not be reprimanded for that. So within the Constitution, we did not put in any clause that says if you're part of another party, you cannot be part of Pro Vancouver. So that's the first level that says we're open. Hmm. The second thing we built into the Constitution was the concept that there's no party line to toe. We're looking at a concept that we want a true democratic process to exist, not only in what our elected officials may do, but what is also occurring within the party. So all we've asked is three things of anybody that's affiliated with a party. First, we want integrity. Second, we want transparency. And third, we want to understand the logic of why a vote was done. And even if that vote is contrary to the group, if those three principles are upheld, then that individual should have the right to do that. I mean, we look at a council and we can't always expect perfect agreement. But if someone has a concern and perhaps the solution that the council is putting on the table does not meet that individual's concern, I would say that that person should have the right to vote their conscience. Should they not?
I mean, this reminds me a bit of an interview that myself and Zoe recently did with a political scientist at the University of Calgary named Jack Lucas. And he was telling us about how this sort of history of municipal politics, at least in Canada, has had people thinking that local politics shouldn't be partisan, that the quote he said is, there is no left or right wing way to fill a pothole. So this kind of reminds me of maybe a move back towards that.
Totally. Absolutely. I mean, when we formed Pro Vancouver, it was not with the concept to form a traditional party. It was to give a common platform and infrastructure for independents to come together and work together. And from that, we also realized that on a ballot, especially with randomized names, the only other thing that we can put on there that would identify the people that are coming together with a common goal is an organizational name. Mm-hmm. And that is why Pro Vancouver was formed.
Right.
We have no real interest to force people to toe a party line. Mm-hmm. Because when you do that, especially if you're on one polar extreme or the other, like I said, as things change over time, at some point in time, the group's going to be 180 degrees out of phase with what's needed within society.
Right. Another of your platforms, one that is, I believe, different from Yes Vancouver, because you both are focused on, everyone's focused on housing affordability, obviously, and livability and enhancing business. Obviously, Yes Vancouver is very into that as well. But one of your other points is creating a responsive city hall. And I know this is something Rohanna spoke about as well, is that there was a lack of transparency. And he felt also a lack of communication, like he would put forward criticisms or critiques or insights he had from, you know, his professional perspective and not kind of hear back or not get a response. And so I'm wondering if that is a tenet of your party, sort of how would you achieve that in City Hall? And what tell us a bit more about what that means, being responsive.
So there's a few things. I mean, again, giving the back history, a lot of people complain about the fact that when you're applying for things at City Hall, it's very much a paper-based process, at least in the beginning. And maybe it shouldn't be, because there are transcription errors that occur when you do that. There are problems with multiple applications. So let's say, for example, if a developer wants to put 10 applications in, why do they need to have 10 paper-based applications for the same standard set of information, who the developer is, where they're located, blah, blah, blah. So if we digitize it, create a profile. We found from past examples in organizations where they cut down 50% of their processing time was related to that very question, the same question that's repeated on every single application. So by having that profile where you can click on it, I mean, this is commonplace. Look at things like Amazon. Your profile is already listed. You can order something. It already knows who you are. It knows your destination for delivery. It knows all of that stuff. So that's what speeds things through. The second thing is, for my industry, dealing with life insurance, I've seen a evolution from a very paper-based underwriting process to a very electronic underwriting process. And so what it does is, when questions are asked electronically, the computer can actually red flag files. So if no red flags pop up, the file is approved and it goes straight through, and it gets into the hands of the people that need it as a permit. But if something shows up as a red flag, it can go to secondary inspection, where a set of human eyes actually looks at it and just says, is this something that is a concern or not a concern? And if they make the decision it's not a concern, it gets processed. If it gets the decision, well, there is a concern, then it goes to a third level of underwriting, where we actually have the whole thing torn apart and looked at line by line by a human set of eyes. And by doing that, the insurance industry was dramatically able to cut down processing time from, if I remember the stats correctly, 90% of the applications would not be processed within 10 days to now about 60% of the applications would be approved within 10 days. That's a huge change in turnaround.
Okay, right? So you're talking about digitizing City Hall applications and creating sort of electronic flagging systems.
Yeah, and also using like a nexus principle that says, okay, if you're a reputable firm, you're using reputable architects and engineers, and nothing's a problem, we can accelerate you through the process. But this is what we're going to do different that ICBC did not do when they tried to do something like this. We do spot audits. So just like Nexus, if anything goes wrong in the process, you now completely lose that express ability and you'll go to the back of the line. So we need there to be some skin in the game for those developers and architects and engineers that are coming together to try and put an application through, to not slide something through that is questionable or is problematic with regards to the development application.
Right. And is transparency also a key part of making City Hall more responsive?
So some of the challenges that we see is that there's too much requirement to go through a Freedom of Information Act to pull records. And so there is a huge desire within the community and with tech people that look at what's going on to actually make all those records available so that you can just go online and search yourself if you're looking for financial statements or agreements or whatever. Anything that has been completed in terms of a process. So, I mean, I understand that there is a requirement to have some confidentiality with certain processes that are in play. This is a normal business thing. But once it's done, just like the provincial and federal government, these documents should be released to the public. They shouldn't be behind a wall of, we now have to go to an FOI counter and ask for that document. And that's what we're saying will change the transparency process. Another thing that we really like is this concept that if council members make a decision in any hearing or a council meeting, that they actually put in writing why they made that decision so that the public can actually see, are the council members actually making decisions that have the best interests of the public at heart, or is there some other ulterior motive?
Right. Okay. So I'm wondering, with the election coming up and so many parties in it and parties that have headed the polls, at least in terms of the mayoral seat, the people who, I think the top two are Ken Sim and then Kennedy Stewart, and then there's below that like Ian Campbell, and you know, you're somewhere near the end. I'm just wondering if you see your run for mayor and Pro Vancouver's purpose as being to put forward important issues that will kind of move from the fringe to the mainstream and to kind of open up that dialogue for future elections, more so than actually winning and taking seats on council or becoming the mayor?
Well, we're in this to actually win. And so when we look at polls, we look at it with a grain of salt, because at the end of the day, we've seen in past elections where, let's say, for example, the NDP were supposed to win by a landslide and they didn't. You know, polls, they dictate what may be happening at the moment the question was asked. And, you know, coming from a statistics background, I can tell you that polls can be very, very deceptive, because it depends on how the question was asked. And when you ask those questions that double check the accuracy, if those questions were not asked in a way that is understandable to the public, you may get very conflicting information. So, for example, one of our party members was talking about some stats about a study that was done about bike lanes and how 61% of Vancouverites favor it. But when I look at the opposing question, it said, well, 47% were opposed to it. Well, if I had 47 to 61, I come to 108. So what is the answer? Is it the 61 actually approve of it? Or is it because, you know, they've asked a question in a funny way that people don't really understand how to answer? So really, again, when we look at polls, even online, so I know that a social media poll was done about all of the mayor candidates. And from that poll, actually, Kennedy and myself came out on top. None of the other candidates actually even came close. So what is it? I don't know.
I was just going to say, do you feel like as a mayoral candidate with Pro Vancouver, you're being represented in the media as widely as, say, someone like Kennedy Stewart?
Well, I can say that from people that ask me how come they don't see us in the media as much, we're probably not being talked about as equally. But at the same time, it's interesting because within our own canvassing efforts, we are getting people that are very, very open to our concept. We're not a difficult sell. And when we also introduce ourselves, I'm finding that there's actually more people that know about us than we actually expected, even based on sort of the poll that has been published in the papers. So really, that does beg the question, A, are we actually that far behind? And B, like you've asked, are we actually being fairly talked about within the media? Hmm. And, you know, based on the evidence, I would say no to both.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, we are running out of time here, and I know that you have an appointment as well, so I don't want to keep you. I really appreciate the time you've taken to chat with us, and we'll be watching your party as the election comes closer. So did you have any final words you wanted to leave us with?
Oh, absolutely. If your listeners are really interested in change, look us up on provancouver.ca. And really, if we resonate with you, help us spread the word. Follow us on Twitter at ProVancouverHQ or follow us on Facebook at ProVancouver or on our website, and help everybody learn about us. Because I think people in Vancouver are so upset and so divided, they really want an option that is the right choice for them. They don't want this to be an election of anybody but fill in the blanks.
Right. All right.
Thank
you
so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. So to everyone listening, you heard where you can find Pro Vancouver if you want to learn more about them. Democracy Watch is covering all the parties and all the candidates. And so next week, we will be featuring an interview with the president of Coalition Vancouver, which is a very different party. Their mayoral candidate is Wei Young. So stay tuned or tune in next week to hear that. We also have a couple episodes of Seeking Office coming up. One is part two of our How We Got Here series, which is going to be focused on the history of Vancouver civic government. And we have another story on Yes Vancouver coming up. So keep following us for diverse coverage of the whole spectrum of candidates and parties running for office, or rather Seeking Office, as our podcast is called, in Vancouver's municipal election.
Oh,
people love it. Thank you very much for tuning in. We're ending a few minutes early today. And have a great weekend. It has been